Now that we're in full spring mode, I am constantly reaching for my Jenny Kane crop cashmere cocoon cardigan because I find it is the perfect level of warm and cozy for when there's still a light chill in the air, but I don't want a coat. And like so many of Jenny Kane's bestsellers, this 100% cashmere cardigan is just so versatile. So I can wear it on its own over dresses, short sleeves, long sleeves, with slacks or jeans. It works with all of it, which is a really good thing because I just never want to take it off. And of course, this cardigan has the impeccable and luxurious level of craftsmanship that you can expect from all of Jenny Kane's products. Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and so think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Because they are a sponsor of the podcast, for a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off their first order while supporting our show. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off. Now, I know that I go on and on about Jenny Kane sweaters because I'm frankly obsessed, but they also have everything you could want to finish out your look. They have dresses, shoes, and even a stunning collection of home essentials. Curate a wardrobe that never goes out of style at jennykane.com. As a Birthful listener, get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about. Pregnancy and postpartum are some of the most nutritionally demanding times of your life, which makes sense because you're basically acting as your baby's pantry while pregnant or nursing. That's why the quality of your prenatal supplements is so vitally important. Hands down, the one I recommend is Needed. So I'm thrilled to say that if you use the code BIRTHFUL at thisisneeded.com, you can get 20% off your first month of Needed products. Needed is the number one nutrition brand recommended and used by me and over 4,000 practitioners, from nutritionists to midwives, functional medicine doctors, and OBGYNs. Needed is for anyone trying to conceive, pregnant, postpartum, and really, this is goodness you can use even before and beyond the perinatal years. Along with prenatals, Needed offers premium supplements for every stage, from egg quality support to a lactation support plan, a stress and sleep support plan, and a gut health plan. In fact, I've had clients rave about Needed's pre and probiotic formula, saying how much better it made them feel compared to their usual probiotics. And to me, Needed's hydration support packets, which only have ingredients you can pronounce, are a must in any doula or hospital bag. Also, Needed's prenatal multi is available in capsules and easy-to-take vanilla powder for those with nausea or pill fatigue. Head over to thisisneeded.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off your first month of Needed products. That's thisisneeded.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off your first month of Needed products. Hello, hello, mighty parent or parent-to-be. Welcome once again to BIRTHFUL. I'm Adriana Lozada. And with today's episode, this is huge. We're going to be wrapping up this wonderful BIRTHFUL series we've been doing on movement and body wellness in pregnancy. And we have covered a lot of ground in this series, giving you tools to help navigate pregnancy discomforts through conscious alignment and mindful exercise. We've talked about prenatal yoga and what you could do beyond what you do on the mat. We've considered ways to help you get better sleep. And we've also talked about how you can use chiropractic and acupuncture as solid bodywork modalities that can help alleviate your current symptoms as well as prepare you for an easier birth. Now, if you're following along and applying some of the many suggestions from this series, we would love to know how they're working for you. So feel free to send us a note to the email address podcast@birthful.com or in the corresponding Instagram posts at Birthful Podcast. All right, so for today's episode, Erin Patterson is here to share her birth story with all its ups and downs and quite a few unexpected aspects, like, for example, the fact that labor started sort of hard and intense from the get-go when she was expecting it to kind of intermittently meander to get her there, or that she ended up with pelvic floor issues that made it hard to walk and required some dedicated work with a physical therapist for over 2 months. So yeah, lots of ups and downs for her. Also in the episode, you'll hear a detailed description of what directed pushing on your back can be like, as well as how Erin ended up in that position instead of in the tub. You're listening to Birthful, here to inform your intuition. Erin, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here and thank you for wanting to share your story.
Yes, you're welcome.
So how about we start way, way at the beginning? What were your feelings while you were pregnant? What did you do to prepare? What were your feelings about labor and birth? Where were you at?
Well, actually, I can start even farther before my pregnancy because my husband and I have been married about almost 5 years by the time we were ready to have a baby, because I was in school for a while and trying to get into my career and get into a good, stable living position before we brought a baby into the mix. But I had watched The Business of Being Born a few years ago, and that really geared me towards not wanting a hospital birth. But my husband had had some friends who, you know, they had had a hospital birth, but we were in a small town, and she had had some complications with the birth and had to be airlifted to a larger hospital. And so that kind of made him uncomfortable with the thought of an out-of-hospital birth.
Mm-hmm.
So when I finished school, I was in this sort of mindset of, hey, I could find some midwives to do an in-hospital birth. And I ended up getting connected with my friend Kate. I have permission to share all the names that I'm going to share in this story as well, by the way. So my friend Kate, who is actually a birth doula, we got together for lunch one day, and she was talking with me about there is a difference, you know, in how your birth may go, even if you have a midwife, versus, you know, having a midwife in the hospital versus having a home birth or birth center birth, something that's not connected to the hospital. And so we really talked through that and kind of renewed my idea of not wanting a hospital birth. And that was still about, I want to say 6 or 8 months before I got pregnant. So I began kind of my friendship with her, and that even started to prepare me a little bit for the pregnancy and birth process. So then we ended up buying a house, and by the time we moved in, I was like, okay, we have a house. We can have a baby now. So yeah, I got pregnant pretty much right after we moved into our house. And I had also read through Ina May's Guide to Childbirth, which was really, really great.
Yeah.
I also work full time, and my maternity leave didn't even start actually until I basically went into labor, which was the policy at work. And I have a long commute from where our house is now to where I work is almost an hour each way. So I didn't get a lot of time for reading. So in the beginning of my pregnancy, I was like, oh, I'm going to read all these books. And then I was like, I don't have time or energy to read these books, because when I wasn't working or driving, I was like, I need a nap.
Uh-huh.
But so I actually ended up discovering your podcast, which became a really, really good resource because I could listen to it while I was driving or at work and still get the information without having to sit and read and having my eyes focused on the page of a book.
Mm-hmm. Yay for podcasts.
Yes, yes. And I recommended it to other friends too. So it's been a wonderful resource.
So you were listening to tons of podcasts and you have read Ina May's book and you saw The Business of Being Born a bit before. What about then? Did you do anything differently physically or in terms of your nutrition? Did you switch anything up from what you were, the information you were gathering?
I had fully intended to be very physically active during my pregnancy to stay in good shape. I've always had some trouble with my hips and sacrum, and part of it stems from sitting at a desk for my job and for my commute. And when I was in school, I did walk back and forth to school, but you still spend a lot of time sitting in class, sitting at a desk, studying, doing homework, etc. So there's still a lot of sitting in my life. Mm-hmm. And I know that the more exercise I get, the better my back is. But it is sometimes challenging to fit that in. And throughout my pregnancy, when I had the energy to exercise, or I wasn't feeling nauseous, I would try to get out and go walking. And I would end up actually in pain because my sacrum would get out of alignment. And so I would end up with problems with sciatica in my left leg. And I did start doing monthly massages. There's a chiropractic and massage place near where we live that I've actually been going to for years, and they're really great with therapeutic massage for pregnancy as well. And I was seeing a different chiropractor in the office, but it wasn't really doing much for my back troubles. And one day when I was seeing him, I asked him if he did newborn chiropractic, just to kind of get a feel for if they did that or not. And he recommended another doctor in the office. She specializes actually in maternal and pediatric chiropractic. Uh-huh. So I started seeing her. Mm-hmm. And this wasn't really actually until my third trimester that I started seeing her. And I wish that I had started seeing her sooner, because she made such a big difference in keeping my pelvis in alignment through my pregnancy. And I was able to start exercising more. But still, you know, by the time I'm in my third trimester, I'm much bigger. And, you know, I've kind of lost the momentum mm-hmm. of staying in shape.
But it was good at least that she did get, like, then you were seeing some sort of relief at least from during that third trimester.
Yes, yes. Cool. I was very, very happy about that. And I have a feeling that I had a relatively quick birth, and I think that's because, you know, I was able to keep myself in alignment through the chiropractic. But so, you know, I didn't exercise and stay as active as I would have liked in my pregnancy. So that also led to my feet swelling a lot. I have some pictures of me when I'm pregnant, and I really mostly put on just like the basketball out front. But my feet are like huge balloons. Some of the pictures of me are a little bit comical, but I just ignore my feet in them.
So as you get closer to, you know, the end of pregnancy, how did you know you were in labor? How did that start?
Oh, it was very obvious, actually. I had been charting my cycle when we were trying to get pregnant. So we actually had a pretty accurate due date. I know that's not, a due date isn't really what it is. It's a date of expected arrival of the baby. It could mm-hmm. be plus or minus a few weeks. But so we did actually have a very accurate time of conception. And I was due Christmas Eve. But I still just kept an open mind about, you know, the baby could come sooner, he could come later. I was not going to be like, oh, well, he's late, so let's get this baby out. I was just mentally prepared to go up to 42 weeks, which is how long I could stay with the midwives. Once I hit 42 weeks, they would have had to refer me to the hospital. But they were pretty confident that that wouldn't happen.
Right, at that birth center, you could stay until 42 weeks.
Yes, yes. Okay. But so December 23rd, I was kind of going about daily life. I had had that week off from work just because we had shut down at work for the week, and which was really great. So I got a few days off. I didn't have to worry about going to work the day before my due date or anything like that.
And you got some naps in?
Yes, yes. Yay. Although the day before, looking back, I was like, I really should have rested more. 'cause We had plans with the family on both Christmas Eve and Christmas. And so on the 23rd, I spent most of the day baking. I did a little bit of housework, but mostly I just baked. I made pies and banana bread and cookies. So I was very much on my feet most of the day. And part of me was thinking, like, I'm really tired. I should probably rest. And part of me was like, well, you know, if this sends me into labor, so be it. I had been having Braxton Hicks contractions actually since about 30 weeks. But they had gotten more frequent and a little stronger later in my pregnancy, but nothing that ever made me think that I was in labor. Mm-hmm. But so that evening after dinner, my husband and I were watching movies and just kind of hanging out on the couch. And I'd had some more Braxton Hicks and they were stronger and I was just a little more uncomfortable. So we went to bed about 9:30 and well, he went to bed in the bedroom. I had been sleeping on the couch for 2 weeks because my feet had been really swollen and being on the couch allowed me to put my feet up and also kind of prop myself at a nice 45 degree angle so I didn't get heartburn. So that was me going to bed.
Oh, you were like in a little V with your feet up and your head up.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So I slept for about 2 hours. And I woke up from a really strong Braxton Hicks contraction and got up to use the bathroom. And then when I came back to the couch, I had another really strong Braxton Hicks. And then the whole feel of the contractions changed. You know, the Braxton Hicks are really, your belly feels kind of tense everywhere and really hard. And sometimes I would even have Braxton Hicks contractions that would last for multiple minutes. But they were never, like, painful. But then I started having labor contractions where it would kind of start off really soft and then ramp up and peak and then die down again. And from our birth class, I was like, oh, this is what they were talking about. Because that was how the labor contractions were really described to me.
Mm-hmm. So. And I often say that you get Braxton Hicks for two reasons. One of them is so that when you actually go into labor, you can see the difference. Like what you're saying is like, this does not feel like that. This feels different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I've got to say the second reason, because I left it open. The second reason why Braxton Hicks is also, it could be your body telling you, you're overdoing it a bit. So like lift your legs up and drink some water.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I did experience, you know, when I was being too active, I would start to get more of them. And so I would go and rest and they would die down. And so that was something I was aware of during pregnancy.
So then now the contractions started feeling different.
Yeah. So I was like, I think I'm in labor. So I had actually hired my friend Kate to be my birth doula. And so I texted her. I was like, well, I'm having some contractions. I think I'm going into labor. I don't know if I'm ready to page the midwives yet, but I'm going to time them because they seem to be coming regularly. So I did start my contraction timer, and I was already kind of having to breathe through my contractions. And so my husband, who had the door open to the bedroom, he kind of woke up like, are you okay? I'm like, I think I'm in labor. So we were sort of like, well, do we page the midwife yet? What do we do? So by like 10 minutes later, I was like, I think we are going to need to page the midwife. I told Kate that, yes, I'm in labor because my contractions started from the very beginning, a minute long and 4 minutes apart and moderate intensity. And that kind of took me off guard a little bit because I had gotten into this mindset that, well, I could, you know, go into sort of pre-labor where I'm having contractions sporadically, you know, over days. I was really mentally prepared for like days of really slow moving labor. Mm-hmm. I was not mentally prepared for just like, bam, you're in labor. Here we go.
And then of course that's what happens, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So by the time, we were ready to page the midwife. And the midwife team, there were three midwives, Carolee, Constance, and Christy. They're all C's. It's great. I knew that Carolee was on call that night. So by the time that we had decided it was time to page her, like, I couldn't even dial the phone. So I had to have my husband page her. And she talked to my husband for a few minutes, and then she talked to me. And I was like, okay, let's go to the birth center and have this baby. Like, things are going. Let's do this. And so she's on the phone with me. And I remember I was leaning over my bathroom counter with my elbows on the counter, like, sort of concentrating on my contractions and talking to her. And so she was just chatting with me about what was going on. And of course, she was really like assessing where I was in labor, because she's like, right, well, you can still talk to me and walk through your contractions. So I don't think you're ready to come yet. So I was like, but they're so close together. She's like, well, I would like you to wait until they're a minute long and 2 minutes apart, and you can't talk or walk through them. You have to concentrate so much. And I want them to be that way for an hour before you page me again. And in my head, I'm like, is she insane? Like, I'm going to have this baby at home. And I'm like, I can't do that. I can't do that.
Did you call Kate at that point?
Well, and then also, so I, for some reason, had thought, because Kate lives near the birth center, which is about a half hour from us.
Uh-huh.
I was like, well, I'll just have Kate meet us at the birth center. That's fine. She can just be there when we transfer there. And so Carolee really had to like convince me, like, no, this is why you got a doula, is for this part of the labor, to get you to the birth.
Exactly.
Yeah. So because I had this thought, like, well, I'm going to inconvenience Kate. You know, I don't want to make her drive all the way out here. And Carolee was really like, this is why you hired her. Like, this is, she signed up for this. Go ahead and call her and try to rest. I was like, I can't rest. I was really uncomfortable in any sort of sitting position.
Mm-hmm.
But I also didn't think that I could relax in a laying down. It really hurt when I laid down. So I had been standing and walking.
Which can tire you out quite a bit, too.
Yes. So I was like, well, okay, I'll try to relax. And then I was like, oh, I am getting tired. I guess I really need to try to lay down. So I did. After I got off the phone with Carolee, I called Kate, and she's like, okay, I'll try to be there soon. She, by the way, had her third baby like 2 months before this. So not only did she have two older children, but she also had a newborn. So mm-hmm. She, you know, had to get all the kids situated with her husband before she left. So I knew it was going to probably be at least 45 minutes to an hour before she got there. So I went and laid down on the bed on my side, and my husband basically came and was giving me back pressure on my sacrum, and he was in charge of timing the contractions. And he was also trying to, like, in between contractions, run around and, like, make sure everything was ready to go. We've got a dog and a cat that, you know, he had to make sure was situated and all that, make sure that we had everything packed.
Mm-hmm.
So the back pressure that he was giving me was really good. It helped a lot. But he, you know, he was also nervous, you know, just as I was. So when Kate did get there, it was very different. You know, she climbed into the bed next to me and rubbed my back and gave me back pressure. And it was just this sort of this calming moment where I was like, okay, Kate's here. She knows all about what's going on. If we are freaked out or have any questions, we can just ask her and it'll be fine. And so it was very much this just calming moment when she arrived.
What time was that around?
I want to say that was about 1 a.m.
And this whole thing, the contractions that woke you up and got you out of the couch were around, did you say around 10? Around midnight?
11:30. 11:30 is when I woke up. Yeah, and so my contractions had slowed down a little bit when I laid down, but only to like 6 minutes apart. they were increasing in intensity, so I did end up needing Like, I needed back pressure from Kate, and I needed my husband to hold my hands so that I could pull on them. He sat in front of me, and she was behind me, but he was also, you know, trying to run around and do stuff. And he comes in from getting stuff ready to go, and our main source of heat is a propane fireplace in the living room. It's also how we heat our water. And he's like, we're out of propane. Like, the tank is completely empty.
Oh, no.
So I feel very proud that I think that I handled myself pretty well. Because I was like, oh, well, when we get to the birth center later in the morning, just call the propane guy and we'll figure it out. I actually stayed really calm, because in other situations I might have been like, what? What are we going to do? Oh, no. But it was fine. So, yeah, we actually never got to contractions being 2 minutes apart. They went back to about 3 or 4 minutes apart, but they had increased in intensity enough that we were like, okay, I think it's time to call Carolee again. And that was about six in the morning. So we got all situated in the car, and so I had been convinced that the 30-minute drive to the birth house was going to be like the worst part of labor, because everyone's like, oh, having contractions in the car is terrible. Mm-hmm. It was actually the best part of my labor. Because I sat in the back seat and I was able to brace my feet on either side of the footwell and actually give myself back pressure just by pushing against the back of the seat. Mm-hmm. And it was actually very relaxing to be in the car. I don't know why.
Yum, delicious, tasty, super clean water. That is what we now happily drink, thanks to our AquaTrue Reverse Osmosis Water Purifier. It's just so much easier for us to stay hydrated. For me, that is vital because I am prone to getting headaches, and so being well hydrated really helps with that. And if you're pregnant or nursing, being well hydrated is also vital for you because good hydration is key during this time of life. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options. Also, their filters are affordable and long-lasting, with just one set of filters from their classic purifier making the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. Using AquaTrue water can even improve the taste of your coffee, tea, and anywhere else you use water to cook, like for making rice, quinoa, stocks, or soups. I truly can't say enough good things about my AquaTrue. AquaTrue also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to aquatrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter code BIRTHFUL at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to aquatrue.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL. Tell me if this sounds familiar. You've taken gorgeous photos of your baby or your kids, and then when you want to share them, it is a pain either trying to find the photos or figuring out the group text that they should go to, and then also remembering that, say, Aunt Helen only does email, so you need to send her image separately. Or, like in my case, where my husband is a photographer who takes magnificent photos that I rarely actually get to see because they live on his phone or end up scattered in text messages that I can't easily find. Enter the Family Album app, which was created to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with your loved ones. Basically, it's a personal space for your family's memories without third-party ads or unwanted eyes, and with a bunch of fabulous features. It automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and easily see how your child has grown. And you can also order 8 photo prints every month to be delivered to your home. The Family Album app also has unlimited storage. Plus, it's totally free. Yep, no more worrying about running out of space or being bombarded by third-party ads. So, to all the parents out there still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, level up your family photo game for free and securely with the Family Album photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, all in one word, and download the app to start creating your shared photo legacy.
So we got to the birth house, which is the actual name of the birth center, the birth house. And let's see, it was about 7 o'clock in the morning. So I did labor at home for quite a while.
Yeah. From the time that you spoke to your midwife and she's saying, you know, stay for about an hour, and you're going like, what? Are you insane? It had been several hours now since you until you finally got to the birth house. I love that name, by the way.
Yeah. So we got in and let's see. We put me on my knees, kind of leaning over a birth ball, just for a couple of contractions, see if that would be relaxing for me. And I immediately threw up. I was like, oh, I'm going to throw up. Like, we've got a bowl for that. They were totally prepared. Aslan was great. He was the one who held the bowl for me. So after that, everyone got pretty situated, and then they moved me to the bed so that Carly could check my dilation, which, by the way, is really uncomfortable. I hear about women in the hospital who are checked multiple times through their labor, and I am so thankful they only checked me once this one time, because I did not want to repeat that. Mm-hmm. I was 100% effaced and 7 centimeters, almost 8. And this was right after we got there. So most of that first stage of labor, I had already passed.
Yeah. So that's a great time to get to the birth center.
Yes. Yes. And, this is mostly what, this is the more vivid part of the labor that I remember, is being in the tub. And I, being in labor, you're not really thinking the same as you would be. you kind of enter the labor land state of mind. Knowing my body, I should not have gotten, I immediately got into this sort of hands and knees, but my arms were up on the side of the tub, but I was resting on my knees with my legs folded under me. Mm-hmm. And my knee and hip joints, and just the lack of circulation with your legs folded under you, I should have known that I wasn't going to be able to sustain that position for very long. So, right. But that was what was comfortable to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'm here. I'm in the tub. I am getting close to 10 centimeters. Let's just have this baby. It's going to come quick. Not so much. So I was like that for a little while, a couple hours, and I did actually start to feel the urge to push. And so I was like, I feel like I need to push. And they're like, Carly's like, okay, go ahead. She didn't check to verify I was at 10 centimeters. She let my body do what it felt it needed to do. She was very hands-off, which was great. I appreciated that. My husband, Lauren, did get into the tub with me so that he could give me back pressure. And then Kate was sitting outside the tub and she was holding my hands. And then my water did break in the tub. And that was about, that was right about 10 o'clock in the morning. While I was pregnant, listening to podcasts and other birth stories, I was like, how on earth would you ever feel your water break if you're already in the tub? Oh, I felt it. it was like this crazy pop. And I felt like something had shot out of me. I was like, is the baby here? Oh, no, that was my water breaking.
No, I love that that you had that realization. And then also that's how it's mostly described. If you really have, it's that word. It always makes me giggle because it's a pop. It's a pop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is.
It's and like my a water even balloon
said
pump.
He felt it.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. Yeah, he had his hands on my lower back, and he felt it through my back. He thought, like, my back had popped.
How cool, though, for him.
Yeah. He's like, that was really weird.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I looked at my notes from the birth, and, you know, they had written down it was clear fluid, everything was good, no blood or meconium or anything like that. So I hung out in the tub for probably another hour. We did move to, my husband sat on the side of the tub with his legs in, and I did a supported squat with my arms over his knees. Mm-hmm. We were like that for a little while, but I think I was getting kind of tired. And they also wanted to change the water out. I'd been getting kind of cold in the water, and they just wanted cleaner water. So they moved me to the bed, and which I was really surprised, like, how hard it was to move. I felt like I couldn't control my limbs, and I was kind of shaky too. But so they helped me get out of the tub and onto the bed, and I had a couple of contractions on my hands and knees on the bed. My legs were getting really tired, so I just couldn't support myself that way. So Carolee had me get into a semi-reclined position, leaning against my husband. And as soon as she got me in that position, I was like, I hate this. This is awful. I'm not staying in this position. And I think a lot of it was because my weight was right on my sacrum. And sitting in that position just has never been very comfortable for me. So she's like, okay, well, your next contraction is coming really quick. So you're going to have to stay in that position through this contraction, and then we'll move you. So I got through that contraction, and then basically, like, they just grabbed my legs and pulled, and I ended up on my back with my head was kind of on my husband's left leg, and my shoulders were kind of stuffed into his legs, and so he sat behind me and supported my shoulders and head, and this is the position that I stayed in for the rest of the birth. And so I probably pushed in this position another 2 hours. And next baby, I really want to avoid being on my back. Now, Carolee had said, you know, she could get me into a squat position, but it might increase tearing. But at the same time, having to push against gravity, I really think that it contributed a lot to the trouble I had in my recovery.
Mm. You were saying that being on your back was really uncomfortable. And so she said, well, contraction's coming, we'll do one more and then move. So why didn't you quite move? Why did you stay? Is this tiredness?
Yeah, I was just really tired. Mm-hmm. You know, they pulled my legs down. So I ended up being more flat on my back instead of semi-reclined with my weight, like right on my sacrum.
Mm-hmm.
So being flat on my back took the weight off my sacrum. So it was more comfortable for my lower back. And I was just like, okay, well, this is good enough. I don't have the energy to move. So yeah, I just kind of let it be. There were, you know, and there had been points where I was like, do I want a water birth? Do I not? You know, so I kind of took the attitude of, well, we'll just see how it goes. And I'm not going to get my heart set on anything specific. Looking back, I am like, well, I wish that I had been more concrete in my decision to not be on my back and to be in the water. So, you know, next birth,
mm-hmm.
those are things I'll make note of. But you know, it is what it is. So I ended up pushing for another almost 2 hours flat on my back. And so my husband was sitting behind me, and my midwife, Carolee, was down between my legs, and she was trying to help my tissues stretch as I was getting, you know, the baby's head to crown. And then I had Kate on my right foot and the midwife's assistant on the left. So I ended up with every contraction, I would push my feet into them and they would push back to brace me. And we all just kind of ended up sliding and smashing my husband against the headboard of the bed. later he was like, it was really uncomfortable, but I couldn't say anything. I was like, I'm sorry. I was sorry. I didn't want him to be like uncomfortable
pinned
in
down
pain
against
either.
The wall, but, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, I was just really smashed up against the bed. But he was a trooper. He didn't say anything. He just stuck through it. So I do remember towards the end, first I'll say that I had been vocalizing a lot through my contractions, just, you know, as a way to cope with the pain. Because you can't really prepare yourself for labor until you know what it feels like. There's, you know, even having been through it, I can't really describe it accurately to someone else. And especially because it's different for everyone. But I was like, well, this hurts a lot more than I expected. So I was vocalizing a lot through the contractions, even in the pushing phase. And they really had to coach me in, okay, lower your voice. Don't put so much energy into your voice, put it into the push. And I think part of it was I was really afraid of tearing. So I was afraid of putting a lot of energy into the push. But by the end, I was like, I just want this baby out. And Kara Lee was up front with me. She's like, okay, before you hit 10 centimeters, we're measuring baby's progress moving down, you know, in the stations, in centimeters. Now we're measuring baby's progress in millimeters as he has to come through your pelvis and out the birth canal. I'm like, okay, millimeters. That's really depressing.
Yeah, it's like super tiny little movements and goes out and comes back in. And yeah, it's not even inches long, right? Inches are big.
yeah. And I was very aware of the whole, okay, I would push his head out a couple of millimeters. And then when the contraction would end, he would go back in a little bit, you know, that little shuffle of two steps forward, one step back. So with each contraction, I was able to get three or four actual pushes in. But it was the first one or two pushes just to get back to where I was at the end of the last contraction. So, and those were my stronger pushes. Then I was tired for the pushes that were actually progressing him further. And I started needing to hear the encouragement from especially the midwife's assistant. Every contraction should be like, oh, that's great. You know, look how good you're doing. Of course, I couldn't really see anything, but you know, the encouraging words, I started to need to hear that every contraction. But it really helped me to hear like, okay, I am making progress. We're doing this. Yeah. And so finally I got the head born on, probably the second, push on a contraction, and then I had to breathe, and then I was able to get his shoulders out on the next push, and then he just popped right out. And my husband said he really popped out really fast. Like once I got his shoulders out, he just kind of shot out of me. I was like, well, that was great. I was happy to get him out.
Yeah.
But so he was born at 1 in the afternoon.
1 in the afternoon?
Yeah. So all told, it was about 13 and a half hours, which they're like, well, for your first birth, that's actually pretty good.
Very decent.
It didn't feel fast.
And then it's that labor land thing, right? The time warps. Time warps during labor. Things you have, there's no sense of time. All right. And yay, baby was born.
yes, finally. Yay. Yeah, he got put right on my tummy and chest. I guess about my ribs area. And he was so slippery. I remember like, oh, I got to hold him right in the middle. He's going to slide right off of me. But, I had, when I had gone to bed the night before, I'd taken my contacts out and, I had intended to put my glasses on, and I had actually left them off for the whole labor. But so now I was like, where are my glasses? I can't see my baby. So I finally got my glasses on. I was like, oh, he's here. He's great. And, he's a little purple, but he pinked up pretty quick.
Yeah, and all babies are born purple.
Yeah.
They all are. Yeah. That's one of those things that we forget to tell people. And especially, mm-hmm. you know, birth partners, it's like when that baby comes out, baby will be kind of bluish purple. And that's normal. And then they take that big yep. breath and pink up. Yeah.
Yeah. He started breathing right away. He cried just a little bit, you know, nothing, no little screams, just little cries to let us know he was breathing. But he was pretty happy from the beginning.
Cool. And did you tear?
I did. I did get a second degree tear. I did have a laceration on my left labia, and my perineum actually separated from the vaginal wall. So that had to be repaired. So I had been, the whole time I was just convincing myself, I'm like, I'm not tearing. And I'm really glad that like no one had said, oh, you're tearing, because that would have like freaked me out. But everyone in the room knew to keep their mouth shut, of course.
But, and it kind of happens yeah. too quick to be able to tell, you know, and where like, it, I don't think it's something in general. Did you feel it when it was happening?
On the last couple pushes, I could feel kind of a burning, but I knew that that didn't necessarily mean that I was tearing.
Right.
So I was just letting myself, you know, like, be convinced that nope, not tearing. I'm good.
And
that was going through my mind. I was talking to myself about this, like, I'm not tearing. It's fine. Just go with it. Just push this baby out.
Yeah. The thing about the tearing, and this is something that I'm going to explain right here, because I think we forget to talk about it at all. When they say first degree, second degree, third degree, fourth degree tearing, those aren't referring to how long the tear is, but how deep it is. So you can have a really long first degree, but it's all in the skin. Second degree is when it gets into the muscle. So it's going deep into the, so the degrees are layers of your body, sort of as it goes. And then it's third degrees and fourth degrees. So first and second degrees are really common, and they're not so difficult in the stitching and repairing. But again, that just says nothing about how, is it like, you know, quarter of an inch long, or is it an inch and a half long? There's none of that being described in the first, second, third, or fourth degree. Now, one of the things, though, that I haven't heard that often is what you were saying of your perineum separating from the vaginal wall. That I'm unfamiliar with.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of that either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, but apparently did not seem concerned about it.
Yeah, and I think like a really bad tear would be a fourth degree tear, and that's like it's basically your whole perineum tears, and there's from your vagina to your anus, they're connected now.
Yes. Yeah.
that's a fourth degree. Like it is as horrific as it sounds, but it's normal to have like a first degree, second degree tear. But I know when you wrote to me, you ended up with some other issues that made the recovery more difficult in terms of your perineum and your pelvic muscles. So tell me a bit about that. What was going on?
So, she stitched me up and everything was going fine with the actual sutures. Mm-hmm. But a lot of my recovery ended up actually being muscular trauma. So I had a lot of trouble, with, my pelvic floor muscles cramping and just being able to walk and stand. I didn't have any trouble with incontinence, which I'm thankful for. About 6 weeks out actually was when, my midwife was like, you should be walking more normally. By this time I was still shuffling a lot. And so not only were we looking at the pelvic floor, issues, but also my sacrum had gotten out of alignment again. So I went back to chiropractic, and then, my chiropractor actually referred me to a physical therapist because I couldn't walk or stand more than about 5 minutes, even at 6 weeks.
Oof.
And I'm thankful that I had 12 weeks off from work, because had I needed to go back at 6 weeks, which I know a lot of women have to go back even sooner than that. But I couldn't have gone back at 6 weeks just because I couldn't physically do it. I ended up going into physical therapy at the end of February. So it was By the time I got referred and then had an evaluation and actually started the physical therapy, it had been, you know, about 8 weeks since William was born. And she also did some scar tissue mobilization because I had a lot of pain just from the scar tissue being really tight after the sutures all healed up.
Uh-huh.
But she did have me work a lot on getting the muscles to relearn how to contract and not to get overtired. So we worked a lot on strengthening my pelvic floor muscles as well as my deep corset abdominal muscles. And as the weeks progressed, I would add in more movement. So I would exhale and do those muscle contractions and then, you know, move my legs around to help my muscles relearn how to contract when they needed to and how to relax when they needed to. I had difficulty. I would sit down to go to the bathroom and I couldn't because my pelvic floor muscles would just cramp painfully. And I hadn't heard of this happening with any of my other friends. This was something that I was like, this really isn't right.
Yeah. It sounds like a very long and difficult road. Did you get any feedback as to why this happened or what could have been done differently for it or any explanation?
Well, my physical therapist, she actually specializes in pelvic floor treatment and she does treat a lot of women postpartum. And she was saying that it's probably just, you know, those muscles experienced trauma of going through labor and delivery. And it could be that those muscles weren't in the proper shape before pregnancy, you know? And she said that it could just be my body. It could have been that, you know, there wasn't anything particularly wrong with how the birth went. It's just that this was the way my body was reacting.
Mm-hmm.
She did say that, sometimes she does, see pregnant women and she has like a feedback machine that she can hook them up to with, where she sticks the little sensors on your skin. And she can actually see how your muscles respond when in different positions. So she can use that to help, give women some idea of what position pushing in would be most effective. You know, if it's in a squat or hands and knees or on their back.
Yeah.
So I actually, with our next baby, I would like to go back and see her for that to actually see if there's an optimal position to be in that might not only help with the delivery, but would help minimize the trauma to the pelvic floor muscles just because I've had this trouble.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it seemed that when you were talking about your pregnancy per se, that you already had some issues with your sacrum and already something was kind of tended out of alignment. So I figure that may also be playing into it in terms of how your muscles respond.
Yeah. Yeah. I did continue with the chiropractic and it did help me get back, you know, to normal, the combination of the chiropractic and the physical therapy. Because after the birth, I was like, well, okay, I don't want to go anywhere. So I wasn't continuing with the chiropractic. I didn't jump right back into it. So I spent a lot of time, you know, sitting or in a semi-reclined position, and I could feel that my pelvis was getting more and more stiff and uncomfortable. I really should have been like, hey, something's not working out here, so I should probably get back to the chiropractic. And I didn't until my midwife was like, well, I think that we need to address this misalignment. Right. So,
and it's hard, Erin, it's hard to, like, with a newborn and sleep deprived and doing all the things that you're doing, discovering, like, your new reality and who you are as a mother and sustaining this new life. It's easy to have those things take precedence and not focus on, hey, we should go to the chiropractor. Hope you're not too hard on yourself about that.
No, there was a period of time where it was frustrating for me and like, I should be able to get up and and take care of the baby on my own. And there's the fourth trimester where it's, okay, you're supposed to take this time and just relax and be with the baby and let people help you. But I felt like I wanted the option to take that time or the option to get up and do something. Mm-hmm. I didn't like feeling like I was forced to not be able to get up and move around. And so that was a little hard. I did get frustrated. And for a period of time, even especially at night feeding, so the baby would not sleep except on our chest, my chest or my husband's chest, because he wanted to be close to us. He wanted to hear our heartbeat. But so for me to sleep, I would need to be laid back a little more, but I hadn't really figured out how to feed him laying back more. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to then pass him to my husband, reposition the pillow so I get propped up a little more, and then take him back and feed him. And then when I was done, pass him back to my husband, reposition to go back to sleep. And it became this really stressful routine, every few hours at night. So I wasn't getting much sleep. So yeah, not being able to get up or out of bed on my own was really hard for me for a little while. Eventually, I just kind of came to terms with it. And as I started to heal more, things got easier as well. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a tough first weeks for sure.
Yeah. My mom was out to our house almost every day, and she helped a lot. So that made a big difference too. So during the day we had a lot of help, but nighttime was very stressful for me because I was always like, okay, I'm tired. I want to sleep, but it's probably not going to happen. So I will say that, recently I watched the video at naturalbreastfeeding.com,
yes.
Which I think that you have advertised on your podcast, and that's how I discover it. And when I watched that video, I was like, I really wish that I had seen this before William was born, because uh-huh. there were things in there that I have figured out how to feed him better, laying down or in a semi-reclined position with him, tummy down on me as he's gotten bigger. But I hadn't figured that out very well when he was newborn. Mm-hmm. So I had ended up, being really upright and trying to sit upright and feed him with him more on his back. And we had some trouble, and it made it harder because of, my pelvic floor issues, not being able to sit up or move around without assistance. It would have been so much easier had I known how to nurse him in a reclined position from the beginning. I think we could have avoided a lot of difficulties with the breastfeeding and with my recovery as well.
Mm-hmm. Sorry you found out about him a bit late, but for the next one, yeah, because this is something you can do like from the first feeding and during that whole time where you're trying to figure it out until you get more comfortable in other positions. Like, it is the easiest way to get this baby to latch and for you mm-hmm. to be well supported. I'm a big fan because that's what I do with my clients. And so I see it work, right? I see even after a cesarean where there's been an hour of separation and baby comes back and is kind of sleepy. And then you put him on natural breastfeeding, laying back on the chest, full body contact. And then the baby starts eating. Yay. So mm-hmm. I'm glad at least you got it at some point. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So to wrap up, if you had to tell all the expectant people, what's that one thing that you would tell them for their experience to make it better?
Probably to think hard about what you expect from your birth ahead of time, and then communicate that to your birth attendant. And one of the reasons that I didn't want to be in the hospital is because I didn't want to be in a situation where I would have to defend my birth plan. So by being out of the hospital, I knew that would never be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So, but thinking back to, you know, do I want a water birth or not? Do I want to, you know, am I okay with being on my back or not? You know, for the next time around, I think that I will have them put it in the notes and in my birth plan, just that I really want to try to be in the water. And I really don't want to be on my back, just because I want to try something different and see if my recovery is easier because of it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so, so much for sharing this birth story with us. And I do hope that, you know, the next one is way more awesome, because this one was good. This one was awesome. Like, you're happy with this one, right? Except for the few things.
Yeah, I'm thrilled with how everything came out, and it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it. And 13 and a half hours is not bad.
Yeah. Yep.
So I wish you the next one be even better, and also with a really speedy recovery, a non-eventful speedy recovery.
Yes, me too. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Erin.
Thank you for having me.
That was mom and engineer Erin Patterson sharing her birth story. You can connect with us on Instagram at Birthful Podcast. In fact, if you're not driving, we would love it if you would take a screenshot of this episode right now and post it to your Instagram stories, sharing your biggest takeaway from the episode. Make sure to tag at Birthful Podcast so we can see it and amplify it. You can find the in-depth show notes and transcript of this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about my birth and postpartum preparation classes and download your free postpartum preparation plan. Also, if you find this podcast to be an invaluable resource for you, the best way to support us is by taking any one of my perinatal classes, doing one of my doula workshops, or trying out some of the wonderful products made by our sponsors. This is what allows us to continue doing this work. Birthful is created and produced by me, Adriana Lozada, with production assistance from Asia Plati. Thank you so very much for listening to and sharing Birthful. Be sure to follow us on Good Pod, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and everywhere you listen. And then come back for more ways to inform your intuition.